Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. And be sure to subscribe to my newsletter, which comes every week by email. I think you'll like it. And it's free. All you got to do is tell us that you want it by hitting the subscribe to the newsletter button and filling out the information. And don't forget, whatever you give us stays with us, and we don't sell it or share it with anybody. And when you ask us to take you off of our list, we do it immediately. John Fox is our guest. John is an old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's the author of If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax. He practiced law for many years as specializing in tax and business. But now he's moved on to another frontier, the frontier of mediation. We're going to get him to tell us a little bit about that. John, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Delighted to be with you.
It's good to have you back, as always. It's always a pleasure. And John's, as I said, folks, is one of the attorneys in our Brain Trust. And you know, you always have to have a few of those guys scattered around. But, John, have you gone over to the dark side?
Well, you know, it's really the bright side.
Oh, it's the bright side. Okay.
It's the bright side.
You were in the dark side. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I can't. I can't admit to that at this old age. But no, I love the practice of law. I really loved it, and I think I lived a period of my practice was really the grand period of the practice of law. It's getting a little ugly at times today, but I think what I enjoyed most and realized that I missed was getting my clients and others together when a controversy was brewing. And some real passions were being exhibited, and people were ready to go to court, or they'd even filed an action in court, and that there was an alternative, and that was for people to sit down, to stop screaming at each other, and to see whether there was some commonality, whether they could agree about some things and not just emphasize what they disagreed about, and then lead them in a way towards the possibility of a resolution short of this litigation, short of the enormous legal fees and costs, the emotional drain and the rest, and the uncertainty. So that's why I'm back in this this piece of it.
So really, John, what you're saying is you've always been a mediator, and I can see that in you. You're one of the redeeming elements of the practice of law in America, and I believe that because I know who you are, I know what kind of person you are. And good for you for having done that. So basically, this is really not that big of a leap for you, is it?
It's not a leap at all, really. Going from practicing
regular law into mediation full time.
No, I mean, what I really enjoyed in practicing law was people. I mean, I represented lots of businesses. The emphasis was on small businesses. And I really, I had the pleasure of being able to be a little selective. And so businesses and the owners that I represented were ones that I really wanted to represent. And when they got into trouble or when they had disputes, when they had fights within their organizations or with other organizations or with employees or with the fellow stockholders, they would call me and say, John, we need you to sit down with us. And it was, as I say, my great pleasure to be able to work with them towards an agreement rather than foment disagreement. And so much today, we see people, you know, who don't see this as an alternative. And with the cost of lawsuits, the length of them, years with appeals and retrials and the rest, I think mediation is the coming thing. And it's been around for a long time. And there's some wonderful mediators throughout the country.
Right. And it is really becoming a discipline, isn't it? I mean, it's becoming an emerging body of legal solutions that it's really much more on the radar than it was even 5 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's been around 20 years, but I think you're absolutely right. The last 5 years, more and more lawyers are serving as mediators. There are a lot of ex-judges who are serving as mediators. And, of course, there are a lot of people who are not lawyers who serve as mediators. A lot of people who are therapists and others, many of those deal with divorce and domestic relations issues. I'm not interested in those, but I think people have realized that that something short of litigation is really desirable if a compromise is available.
John, stand by. We're going to take a break in just a few minutes, in a few seconds, folks, and when we come back, I'm going to ask John to tell us about how we get into mediation and what's the difference between mediation and arbitration, and how do we there are some things that you can do before everything, you know, turns to mush and everybody gets mad at everybody. There are actually some things that you and I can do to help us get into mediation, and that's coming up right after these messages. We'll get John to explain that to us. It's 20 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate, John Fox, is our guest.
I don't feel so good.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend John Fox. John is the author of If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax, Uncovering Our Most Expensive Ignorance. And it's an outstanding book. You heard me talk about it many times on the show before with John, and I still recommend it to you folks if you check it out when you get a chance. And even it should be even at your local library. But, John, it's still in print, isn't it?
Oh, very much in print. And you can get it at Amazon. You can get it at your library. Obviously, you can go in and look at it at the library. You can order it from Westview Press.
Well, I know how you are, John, and obviously it's good for people to buy your book. That's always good for business. But I also know that you basically just want people to have the information. So however they get it, I know you want them to do that.
I do. In fact, I'm about to begin a 50-page book for the 2004 campaign on the 10 questions that voters ought to be asking the candidates on tax issues. I haven't come up with a title yet, but it's going to be a short, you know, really brief, but with highlights, and here are some facts, and here are some really crucial questions. How can we have this?
And you're going to launch that on the show, right?
I will, absolutely. I launched my book on your show.
That's right. So we're going to launch the 50-page book on the show. When will that happen, John? Do you know when that'll come up?
Well, I'm beginning to write it now. I hope to have it out by, before tax season.
Okay, and I'll help you with that title, John. I know you're going to want me to help you with the title because
I know. Well, I'm going to put something about Jim Blassingame in there. But
hey, John, let's talk about the difference between arbitration and mediation. People hear the term binding arbitration, and what's the difference between arbitration and mediation?
Well, arbitration is a much more formal process, and arbitration often appears in contracts. For example, you look at your brokerage house. When you have a brokerage account, you're agreeing to binding arbitration. So, if you have a dispute with Prudential Securities or Smith Barney, they require you to go through arbitration. It means that an arbitrator is selected from a panel of arbitrators. Usually you get a right to depose the other side or send interrogatories out. It's very much like a legal process, and the end of it is binding on you. Mediation,
whatever the arbitrator decides is that's done. There's no appeal. It's over.
Well, there can be an appeal, but it has the legal effect of a trial judge having found. And so typically, you can, and then arbitration provisions are written into contracts, and you put in different provisions that you want in there. But voluntary mediation, can lead to a binding agreement, because that if you finally settle the case, which is the typical result of a mediation, then you actually sign an agreement that we agree to these following terms, and they're enforceable in law, etc. But the wonderful thing about mediation is that it is entirely voluntary. Two sides say, look, rather than spend a fortune on legal fees, have a three-year wait until we go to trial, go through all the depositions and headache, why don't we just sit down with a mediator and see if we can't resolve this? Now, both sides have to agree. One side can't compel it.
Right.
And so if you do agree, and the best thing to do is to agree early on before somebody has poked the other one in the nose and the other one's turned around and hit them in the eye. you know, so that you're still...
Figuratively speaking, we're
figuratively
here,
speaking, for the most part.
John, but what about, are people represented with counsel at mediation?
They can be. You can set up your own rules for that entirely. You can bring in counsel. Some people do. Often they don't. Counsel should sort of take a back seat. They can be useful to make sure that people aren't confusing things or making statements they shouldn't be made. But in mediation, you agree at the outset that everything that is said is confidential, that nothing that is said to the mediator can be represented in court. The mediator can't be called as a witness. The mediator's notes can't be subpoenaed. So it is purity and confidence. And if you don't like the way the mediation is going, you can say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're not bound to stay there forever. But it's a chance to sit down. And it's a chance then to address what I call your interests versus your positions. Your positions are, I've earned this bonus, or I've earned the right to control the company, or I've earned the right to buy out somebody, and I'm entitled to it, and I'm going to sue you if you don't go along with it. Your interests are, what do you really care about? What matters most to you? What's important to you versus your public pose? Jim, I'm a big reader of your newsletter, and I say this not just to compliment you because I really think it's useful.
It's okay.
And I was reading.
You can compliment me. It's okay.
Well, I think I don't want to overdo it, but I think it's terrific, and I read it every time I get it popped on my screen. And yesterday you had the newsletter. You described the four levels of professional consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and there are two levels that you talked about: the unconscious and competent, which I loved, and the conscious competent. And the unconscious incompetent is often the person who never thinks of mediation. The unconscious incompetent is the one who doesn't know what he or she should know, mm-hmm. and is just determined that they're right and they're not going to listen to anybody. And the conscious competent is somebody who knows how to manage their egos. You describe that. And they look for what's really in their self-interest. And they do something, as you say, which is kind of self-analysis. You know, get out of your posturing. Get out of pretending that, you know, you are king of the world, and figure out what is really going to help you, what is going to advance what you need, and what isn't necessary, what isn't essential. And the conscious competent is the one who typically would say, let's sit down and mediate. You know, if after 2 or 3 or 4 hours we can see that it's not going anywhere, we can call it off, but let's try this.
Mm-hmm. That's well said, John, and that's the beauty of the mediation is, you know, is it's a way to prevent as much brain damage and too much expense and arrive at what you really want, which is some kind of middle ground, right?
And you can arrive at an agreement that you couldn't get in court.
Right.
Often you can agree to something.
Hold that thought, John. We've got to take a quick break, folks.
Okay.
We got more to come with John Fox right after these messages. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7-2. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I want to remind you, John Fox's book is called If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax. And folks, this book is a watershed book, and I recommend it to you. It's a very important book. It'll help you to understand what's going on out there, what's really happening with your income tax, the money you pay in, and some outstanding ideas on how we can solve some of the problems that we have, which we do have plenty of problems. And you know, Joan, John, it's not just the United States. It's also our state. It's at the state level. We got some major problems with regard to funding the government and the wasteful situations we have in states out there, and as well as inefficient ways to collect taxes. We got some real problems out there, and they're really coming to light these days, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and they're not easily solved. You know, we have lots of political interests, lots of groups that have the benefit from certain provisions, and others who don't. And so, but what is really important is for voters to understand what the issues are, and then they can decide. And my book is attempting to do that, to say, look, here are the issues at the federal level, and I think if you understand how to analyze those issues, you can use it for the state and local level.
John, does the IRS ever use mediation?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. They have a special panel down there, and I don't know how often it's been used. I've never been engaged in one with the IRS. I've done a fair amount of work with the IRS on behalf of clients, but never in a mediation.
But if you were used, they use their own mediators, right? I mean, they have their own internal employees.
Well, they have some outside mediators. If I wanted to get on that panel, I think I could.
Now, what about as a mediator in? Now, you live in New England. You live in Massachusetts.
Yes, right.
And so, are you kind of tied to a region or to an area, or do you have mediation? Will travel or what?
Mediators. The interesting things about mediators, and maybe it'll change someday, is that you're not licensed. I can't speak for every state, but in Massachusetts, all over the country, you don't need to be licensed by that state. So mediators travel. I mean, we travel. We're prepared to go for the right mediation anywhere. And
so if somebody wanted to contact you, they could do it through your website, johnofox.com?
Yeah, www.johnofox. You got to have the O in there, johnofox.com.
And what about a phone number?
413-549-2604.
Okay.
But what I wanted to not talk about so much my own mediation, but just the advantage of mediation. If your listeners think about the dispute, I mean, let's take an employee who's been terminated, and she wants to get her job back, and she's furious about this, and she's ready to file suit. Well, what do you do? Do you want to go through all that litigation? Does she want to retain counsel to do it? She's been a leading executive with a company. And if you sit down with both sides, if both sides say, well, let's see if we can't resolve this, what do you really want? In a number of cases, what you want is an appropriate severance package. You want a letter of recommendation. And it's not unusual for somebody to say, and I want them to show some respect for me. A lot of disputes have to do with people not feeling that they're respected in the work that they do.
They feel like they've been dissed, don't they?
They really feel they are. And so often it is getting people to talk with each other rather than to yell and posture.
Well, is it also possible, John, let's take this same person you're just talking about who's upset about the way they've been treated. Is it possible that mediation could redeem the employment situation, that where the boss could say, if the boss is well-meaning enough and fair enough to say, you know, Joan, I disagree with you, you disagree with me, but I don't want to lose you over this. Why don't we sit down with somebody and see what we can come up with?
Well, it not only is true, but what mediation does is it gives you a chance to meet privately with a mediator and say, look, this is really why I fired Joan. You know, and Joan says, this is what I really think is going on. Mm-hmm. And you listen to them and say, well, does the other side know what you're thinking? And they say, well, maybe not. Well, can I reveal some of that? You always have to ask them because it's confidential. But could I talk to her or could I talk to him about this? And they say, all right, talk, but don't mention that. You know, but it gives you a chance to begin to open up a dialogue that never existed.
John, quickly, in a short answer, typically how long does a mediation take?
Well, you know, there isn't a short answer to it. But
could it take a few days?
Most mediations could happen in a day. It certainly can happen in 2 days.
Yeah. Thanks, John. We're going to get
you're
back
welcome.
On and talk about this some more. Thank you for being
wonderful.
Here.
Wonderful.
Good job. John Fox, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.